Hi everyone, I'm Ella and welcome back to my podcast. This time we'll be discussing Native American traditional music, specifically one particular ritual in Native American traditional music. We'll be focusing on the ghost dance. This actually started as a new religious movement around the 1890s, with both a musical and a wider cultural element. It was absorbed into a number of Native American belief systems all across the U.S. around the late 1800s and onwards. Its founder was a person by the name of Jack Wilson, also known as Wovoka, a peaceful prophet figure. He claimed that proper performance of the ghost dance could reunite the living with the spirits of the dead and bring peace, prosperity, and unity to Native peoples across the states. The ghost dance itself was based on something called the circle dance, a much more long-standing traditional ritual among Native Americans. The ghost dance itself was first performed by the Nevada Paiutes in 1889. Its roots lie a little bit further back than the 1890s. In 1869, there was a Native healer called Hawthorne Wadzawob, I'm probably mispronouncing that, sorry, who initiated a tradition of dancing, which he claimed was prompted by a journey into the realm of the dead. He spoke of promises made to him by the deceased to return within several years. So he took the long-held tradition of the circle or round dance and urged them to perform it with some new modifications, wherein an individual leads a ceremony in the center of a circle of dancers. He was aided in his efforts by Jack Wilson's father, who died a year later in 1870. In 1889, Jack Wilson, already a well-known spiritual leader, claimed to have a vision during a solar eclipse. He went to heaven and was told by God that his people must live in peace with both each other and the European colonizers, engaging in honorable behavior and abandoning old practices of both war and self-mutilation in mourning. This would guarantee the return of the deceased at some unspecified date in the future. The dance had a duration of 5 days in total, and performers of it would hasten reunion with their own loved ones. There was a strong element of the ecstatic to the dance. Participants were frequently taken with trance-like states or visions, and it was believed that if a sick individual joined the dance until they lost consciousness, that they would be healed. The dance itself involved the larger community dancing in a circle to the sounds of drums and chanting, frequently holding hands. At the center, there would be a leader, often waving an eagle feather fan. It was a proactive and participatory tradition, especially involving the music. People were encouraged to create their own music for the dance, rather than strictly following traditional forms, and to tailor the ceremonies to personal visions. Here is an observer's description of the dance. As the crowd gathered about the tree, the high priest, or master of ceremonies, began his address, giving them directions as to the chant and other matters. After he had spoken for about 15 minutes, they arose and formed in a circle. As nearly as I could count, there were between 300 and 400 persons. One stood directly behind another, each with his hands on his neighbor's shoulders. After walking a few times, chanting, "Father, I come," they stopped marching but remained in the circle and set up the most fearful, heart-piercing wails I ever heard, crying, moaning, groaning, and shrieking out their grief, and naming over their departed friends and relatives, at the same time taking up handfuls of dust at their feet, washing their hands in it, and throwing it over their heads. Finally, they raised their eyes to heaven, their hands clasped high above their heads, and stood straight and perfectly still, invoking the power of the Great Spirit to allow them to see and talk with their people who had died. This ceremony lasted about 15 minutes, when they all sat down where they were and listened to another address, which I did not understand, but which I afterwards learned were words of encouragement and assurance of the coming Messiah. When they arose again, they enlarged the circle by facing towards the center, taking hold of hands, and moving around in the manner of school children in their play of needle's eye. And now the most intense excitement began. They would go as fast as they could, their hands moving from side to side, their bodies swaying, their arms, with hands gripped tightly in their neighbors, swinging back and forth with all their might. If one, more weak and frail, came near falling, he would be jerked up and into position until tired nature gave way. The ground had been worked and worn by many feet, until the fine flour-like dust lay light and loose to the depth of 2 or 3 inches. The wind, which had increased, would sometimes take it up, enveloping the dancers and hiding them from view. In the ring were men, women, and children, the strong and the robust, the weak consumptive, and those near to death's door. They believed those who were sick would be cured by joining in the dance and losing consciousness. From the beginning, they chanted to a monotonous tune. That was from a female observer of a large gathering of Native Americans participating in a ghost dance in the late 1890s. So, larger cultural significance of this particular tradition. Conditions for Native Americans at this time were harsh due to epidemics, starvation, and persecution by the government, as well as the breaking of treaties. There was a typhoid epidemic among the Paiutes in 1867, and this, along with other diseases spread by European immigrants, killed a massive portion of the native population. The ghost dance was seized upon as a message of hope and a proactive action against ongoing cultural trauma. It also ignited a new interest in native cultural heritage, which was being suppressed and was on the decline, so it is, in part, responsible for the preservation of some Native American traditions which survived. The flip side of this is that it is a tradition influenced by European culture. Wovoka spent some time with white people, partially growing up on a white Christian ranch, as a matter of fact, and he absorbed cultural, particularly Christian, ideas from them. Some of his communications contain references to Jesus and his preaching of an apocalypse-like event, a shaking of the world before the new era, is reminiscent of the Christian rapture. So the dance's power as a force for cultural preservation is mixed with the contamination of another, the usurping and dominant, culture. The irony of a belief where white men might be banished from the land being espoused in a tradition which was so reminiscent of the Last Judgment is palpable. As a cultural tradition, it rapidly spread across the United States, becoming entrenched as a tradition amongst many different and disparate groups of Native Americans. A significant one of these would be the Lakota Sioux. Practice of the ghost dance figured in their resistance to white expansionism. They interpreted the largely peaceful message of the prophet slightly differently. For them, the dance hastened a renewal of the earth where all evil was gone, evil for them including the white man, who would be banished from their lands, whereas the teachings of Wilson emphasized peaceful coexistence between cultures, including white and native culture. Significant also is their belief in something called ghost shirts, which became associated with the ceremony. Warriors specifically would wear them, as they were believed to stop bullets. The origins of this belief are speculated upon, as they were not included in Wilson's initial preachings. James Mooney, who made some study of the ghost dances, speculates that they are another example of white influence on the ghost dance. He points out a resemblance to the endowment robes of the Mormons, robes of white muslin displaying various figures and designs, which were supposed to bestow protective powers upon the wearer. Mormons had some communications with the Paiutes, mostly of a positive nature. It is also suggested that this could have stemmed from one of the magic tricks that Wovoka regularly performed. He made it appear as if he was catching bullets with his hands. 1890 brought something of a betrayal of an all-too-common nature as well. The U.S. government broke a treaty they had signed with the Lakota, breaking the agreed-upon reservation into 5 smaller areas. The ultimate goal of this was to assist white homesteaders by breaking up tribal communities, as well as forcing natives to conform to a more European way of life, either by peaceful means or by force. Families were granted small plots of land, and children were taken to residential schools. These were designed to eliminate Aboriginal culture and assimilate the youth. The schools taught English and Christianity, as well as more European cultural practices. Generally, they forbade inclusion of Native American traditional culture and language, with harsh penalties for any infraction. The process was to initially supply the Sioux with food and educate them in white farming practices, though this did not take into account the arid landscape in which they lived, unsuitable for growing crops. Unfavorable weather in the 1890 season exacerbated the situation, while at the same time the government, unwilling to continue support, halved the supplies of food being sent. This, along with the recent depletion of bison populations, caused the beginnings of starvation. Desperate for some form of hope, as well as a form of protest, the Sioux turned to the ghost dance. The supervising representatives of the American government felt threatened by this display of a culture they did not understand. This culminated in a massacre of ghost dancers at Wounded Knee, after which participation in the ghost dance dropped off, though did not die out, for fear of reprisals from the U.S. government, though the cultural impact had already been made. It was not to gain in popularity again for decades, until the rise of Native American activism. In more recent years, it has experienced a resurgence as part of a movement to reclaim Native American culture and heal past traumas, and retains its status as one of the first forms of musical protest in American history.